Can you put your phone on silent? Unprofessional.
That's what you sound like. It's also on silent. You want me to put it on do not disturb? Take that, liberals.
I don't. Did Yaakov's sons marry Canaanites? Wow. I'm stressed. Like, are you going to be okay now that I'm watching you drink your third caffeinated beverage of the day?
Yeah. I'm not going to sleep tonight.
According to Jubilees and many of the classical sources, Shimon and Levi were less bothered by the actual act of rape and more by the potential for intermarriage.
Yeah.
Listen, I know that this is all true, and I still am upset.
Yeah. Well, in the text itself, they seem outraged. I don't know, by, like, the financial or social repercussions as opposed to, like, demon safety. Are you reading
Ahatora? Yeah, I'm looking at Ahatora because, like, yeah, there are just, like, a lot of thoughts on, like, why they murdered the... Basically, like, the question is, like, why did they murder all of the people,
right,
including... And then, like, also... Yeah, what was the sin for which Shem was, like, deserving of death? Like, so, like, which crime of these crimes is a capital crime?
What do they say?
Okay. So some say it's fundamentally justified that Shem, that abducting Dina was a capital crime, and then... So some say it's because they take her against her will, it's theft. That's what Rambam and Abarbanel and Or Chaim say.
But it's theft in terms of, like, kidnapping.
Yes, not that it's not including the rape part. And then the Tosafist commentary assumes that rape is punishable with death, even though neither Torah or Noahide law says that. And then, according to Jubilees and many of the classical sources, Shimon and Levi were less bothered by the actual act of rape than more by the potential for intermarriage. And then the question is, like, what's the sin of everyone else in the city? And some people just say that they condone it. Some say that the whole city, Or Chaim says that everyone participated in the taking of Dina, thereby transgressing the Noahide law regarding theft. And some say that they joined in the sexual assault. Tosafist says that. And then... Oh, because the word Tamu is... Or is it Timu? I can't tell. Timu is evidence that the whole city was implicated. And then...
So I have to start keeping a list of, like, people to cast.
Yeah.
Okay. Do you want to start?
Yeah.
Have we already been recording?
Yeah, we're recording.
God damn, that's a lot for you to cut out, bro.
It's going to be fine. It's only 8 minutes. There's been more. Maybe I'll actually, like, edit it within a week, and then it will be easier because I won't have to listen to the minutes of silence pass by. But I can't make any promises to that.
Okay, I'm getting my... Where is it? PCP, PC Movements. Pop Culture Parsha, Pop Culture Movements.
Oh, nice. PCP, PCM?
Yeah. Alrighty. Welcome to yet another episode of Pop Culture Parsha,
where we irreverently discuss reverent texts.
This week, do you want to go first, or do you want me to go first for Pop Culture Moment?
Sure, I can go first.
Yeah?
I'm Valerie, and this week I'm a Bones Day.
A classic. Also very fitting, because today we learned about bones for an hour.
I brought it up to Leon. We learned, like, about... Why didn't you include this in your source sheet?
We learned about Yosef's bones specifically, not just bones in general. My name's Shoshana. This week I am Kristen Stewart swearing during her first SNL monologue.
Nice. She just got engaged.
Mazel tov. She's...
Can you move your mic a little closer?
A little closer, of course. She got engaged. Her new movie's out. But her new movie is also not available in Israel yet and not online. And so, like, I'm fretting. Like, all I want is to watch. Like, I feel like my entire life has been leading up to Kristen Stewart, like, the love of my life, playing Princess Diana, another love of my life, but not really, more like a MILF type, mm-hmm. like a respected MILF on screen. And she's getting rave reviews.
She really is.
And I don't know how much longer I can read headlines that are like, all you need to do to survive is see Kristen Stewart in this movie. Because I'm like, I know, and I'm trying to, but yeah. It's not out in this country yet. And I haven't seen a movie in theaters since 2020.
Wow. So is this going to be the one?
Since, and I had like a plan to that this is the first one I have seen since maybe June or July of 2020.
Wow.
And before that, I hadn't seen it in months because like everything had been shut down.
Yeah.
So yeah, so like I really, really want to see that movie.
Wow. You know, I know someone that knows her in LA.
Princess Diana.
Princess Diana, no. You have a mutual
with Kristen Stewart?
I do.
I think my biggest...
My friend went to Prague with her.
Shut up.
Yeah.
Shut up. Christ. Oh, man. I'm like about to cry. I love Kristen Stewart. I'm gay and was born in 1995. Like, I grew up on Twilight and Zathura and, like, all of her indie... Like, Adventureland. Like, mm-hmm. all her indie stuff as well. Love her to death. I think my biggest flex of like someone I know who knows someone famous, I'd say two. One being that I have a couple of mutuals on Instagram who are mutuals with Diana Agron, okay. who is another love of my life.
Mm-hmm.
And the other is that my cousin like tangentially sort of knows Robert Downey Jr.
Cool.
As a lesbian, the first one is more impressive to me. Mm-hmm. I care much more about Diana Agron than I do Robert Downey Jr. But yeah.
I'm trying to think now about...
Are you trying to think of who Diana Agron is?
No, I was trying to think of...
Your star connections.
Yeah.
Diana Agron, if you're listening to this, just give me a follow. Just say hi one time. I've loved you for a very long time.
Okay, well, here's hoping that you get that.
She's Jewish. I wrote about her in this Alma thing I'm about to get published.
Oh.
Yeah.
What'd you write?
I can't tell you. It's spoilers. Oh. But I'm writing about a couple of different Jewish tropes, and Diana Agron is involved in the discussion of that. But yeah, okay. So, after all that, this week's parasha is Vayishlach. Lots happens. These, like, the back end of Sefer Bereshit is just, like, chock-a-block of action. So we see Yaakov returning to the Holy Land after staying in Haran for 20 years. He hears that his brother Esav wants to reunite and reconcile, and he's terrified of that. So, and he hears that Esav is approaching with, like, 400 men, so he starts sending him, like, a bunch of gifts to try and appease him. This week, Yaakov also fights an angel by the river, and hurts his leg.
No.
He hurts his leg.
His balls.
He hurts his leg.
It's for sure his balls.
It's not his balls.
It is.
It's not his balls.
It is.
It's the Gid Hanasha.
It's the same as when...
He hurts his hip.
Avraham asks his servant, he says, put your hand under my thigh. No, he's saying, cut my balls.
No, my friend sent me a really interesting thing about that I can't remember now. I think it's his hip. That's why we don't eat the hip. Mm-mm. There's nothing about not eating, like, cow testicle.
I hear you.
It's about the sinewy vein.
And I can tell you that Howard Marcos will go to the grave to say.
Okay, well, I'm still not convinced by Howard telling me that Toldot is Toledot. Even though he seems pretty sure to go to the grave with that as well, even though many other people say it's not that. So it's his hip.
Who is the leading expert on biblical grammar in the world?
Not Howard Marcos.
It 100% is Howard Marcos.
Not in the world.
Yes.
Maybe in Pardes, but not in the world.
No. I think like in our modern.
Like shut up.
Everyone you and I know has learned biblical grammar from Howard.
Everyone you and I know who has learned biblical grammar from Howard is from part. We know them from here.
Right, but now he's also teaching at HUC, and he's also teaching at a course. He's like teaching several courses online. Listen, I'm not the queen of the Howard Marcos fan club.
It sounds like you are, bro.
I love you, Howard, but no. I'm just saying I think that he's one of the leading experts on biblical Hebrew grammar.
I love Howard very much, but I don't know.
Okay. Anyway. It's a machloket.
Machlokes.
And you know what? Those machloket matters. I hate when you get I always get my joke a split second before I do.
Anyway, so Yaakov injures his hip, his leg.
No.
Maybe his testicles, but maybe not. Anyway. Yaakov and Esav meet up, they hug, they kiss, they decide to part ways. Yaakov then buys some land near Shechem, and then Shechem abducts and sexually assaults Dina, Yaakov's son. And then Shimon and Levi, two of Yaakov's sons, they kill everyone in Shechem. The king, the prince, all of the men. But first they convince them to circumcise themselves. It's a genius move. It's hurt, like seriously maim yourself, like be in the most pain of your life. It's like, and like, in, it's obviously in order so like they're weak and they can't fight back. But at the same time, it's like, it's the double-edged sword of like, I'm going to mess you up, but then I'm going to mess you up. Like, I think it's funny.
I mean, I don't think... I did not initially read it as, I'm like thinking about all the times I've like made these statements of like, it's not pshat that Dina gets raped. And then I like go back. I'm like, oh, it is pshat. Yeah. Sorry. Sorry, everyone. I'm exploring this for the first time. Kind of. There are gaps in my biblical knowledge.
I looked this parsha with one of our friends last year. And that's like, and I thought about it like deeply. Mm. And have like lots of tidbits about great. This parsha specifically I might share later.
Love
on
tidbits. But what I was gonna say is in my initial reading, because the Mefarshim also say that they like said that they had to circumcise themselves so that they would be not prepared for battle, but that wasn't my initial read of that. I thought it was really like Yaakov is really trying to make a deal with them to say like, yeah, you can be part of our family, but like you gotta
Maybe Yaakov intended that, but I think Shimon and Levi, who are like sort of masterminds in this whole thing, like they had very active roles from the start.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe that was their intention. Maybe. We can discuss it later on because I haven't finished the parsha sefer yet.
Oh, okay. I was going to say, what do you think they did with all the extra foreskins?
That's a good question. We can discuss it in a bit.
Cool.
So after that incident with Dina and Shechem, they keep traveling. Rachel dies. Mama Rachel dies, mm-hmm. giving birth to Binyamin. She's buried. Reuven loses his birthright. There's that. Reuven's had a busy couple of parshas.
From sleeping with Bilha?
Like moving the bed. Like it's a whole ish of what that very vague language. Mm. Then Yaakov arrives in Hebron. Yitzchak dies at the end of this parsha as well. And then at the very end, there's like an account of Esav's wives and kids and grandchildren. And that's about it. Like it ends this story, which is basically like Yaakov's last main role in the story, ends with Esav's lineage, which is interesting. Maybe there's things to be said about it. But the pop culture we have chosen for this week.
Pop culture we chose this week was Game of Thrones, the episode entitled Reigns of Castamere. Is that the right name of the...
Yeah, because here's the thing. I thought it was called Red Wedding.
No.
And I spent a long time being like, Red Wedding. And they're like, what is that? And then it wasn't called that. Like, so Googling it was hard.
I'm sorry about that. I led you astray. Season 3, episode 9, which includes at the very end the infamous Red Wedding scene. Yeah. I also did not exactly realize it. Because here's the thing. Okay. I guess we should tell our Game of Thrones origin stories.
Okay.
So I read the books.
Okay.
And I one time saw a meme. I'm just telling you that up front because one time I saw a meme that was like, how will you know if somebody's read the Game of Thrones books? Don't worry, they'll tell you. Yeah. So here I am. I'm telling you. And then I tried to watch the show and I've seen like a handful of episodes, but it's hard when you've read a book and then you're trying to watch a TV show, especially when like Game of Thrones that has a lot of characters, and it's just like they don't run around with labels. Like when you're reading the book, their names are right there, you know? But like when you're watching the show, you're like, wait, is that supposed to be, or is that supposed to be that person, or like whatever. And I just found that exercise to be a little too exhausting. So I wasn't that interested in the show. And I'm also like a purist. I hate, like, I understand why shows and movies have to deviate from the books, but I'm like, if you're going to make something based off the book, you better make it exactly the same.
Especially if you're making it a TV show.
Yeah.
Like, you have so much time. But I think that's also, like...
Right, like, they changed the name of Robb Stark's wife, and they, like, kind of changed the origin story. Like, it's not so different. His name is
Robb. It brings me back to the discussion. Robb. It took me back to the discussion we had in, like, the first episode of... like very fancy things having very simple names, and we're in this high fantasy world. They invented a different language that you can learn how to speak, and this dude's name is Robb.
Well, his father's name is Ned.
I know, it cracks me up. Yeah. It's so funny.
Yeah.
Robb. Anyway, my dealings with Game of Thrones is that I have not seen it.
So you just jumped read in it. On I just, this episode, so and I was like, Shoshana, did you do like any background reading? Nope. And she was like, nope.
Not at all.
It's all out there. Like, you don't have to watch the show.
I used to come home from school, like, I guess in like grade 11 and 12, which is around when it started. And my brother would be watching it. And I'd like walk into the family room and like see all on TV and then turn around and walk out again. Like, I just had no interest.
Yeah.
I was always one of those things that like, I was going to watch later, but then I felt like a lot of things I don't even care about spoilers that much, but it just got revealed through the internet. So I knew like major plot points. Like I was always told when someone important died or something, like I knew when the Red Wedding happened. I just like, it didn't mean anything.
Right.
But that being said, I thought I knew like quite a bit about Game of Thrones. I spent this whole hour the most confused I've ever been. My favorite note that I took was, these people are all going somewhere. I just don't know where they're going. Like, everyone's just walking, like, trying to get to a place. And they're like, we need to get there. And I'm like, where are you going? Like, what's up, you guys? And it's so slow because all they're doing is walking. And I'm like, I don't care anymore.
Yeah. Literally, everybody who watched Game of Thrones is screaming right now at the two of us. being pop That's culture people and neither of us having actually watched Game of Thrones.
And I'm a pop culture person, but I'm also a bit of a Dafkinik. And like sometimes when things get too popular and everyone's like, oh, you have to see this. I'm like, no, I don't.
Well,
in Suits. I'm like, I don't have to see that.
I don't have this in Suits. That is the only time these two those two shows have ever been compared in history.
In my head, they're the same show.
That should go on a quote, on a t-shirt or something. Suits and Game of Thrones, the same show. What was I going to say? I mean, I sent you a voice note where I was like, you think people came for me when I couldn't explain the American government? Like, I'm doing absolutely no attempt to explain. I mean, I can explain to you who some of the characters are that you saw, but I don't know that there's a point.
It's also partly why I thought why I purposely didn't do any background reading, because I'm like, I'm just going to piss some people off today.
Yeah.
Because I know when I'm listening to a podcast and they say something that I disagree with or they say something wrong and I verbally respond to them out loud.
Yeah.
I want people to do that to this. Well, okay, I'll just say a like completely outlandish statement and they're like, and you at home are like, what the F? And I'm like, that's what I want.
Great. Okay. So I'll explain everything to you.
And I will say, I don't care. And then you at home will yell.
Yeah.
but okay, let's jump in. There are a few, I think, more obvious parallels we saw. There's like a few interesting, an interesting thought experiment arose this week surrounding the show.
Let's start there.
So again, I said, everyone's just roaming around everywhere.
It's a great idea to drink a Coke while we're doing this podcast. So you're just burping.
Everyone's like walking around. Everyone's got somewhere to be. And it's wild. It's like, it's the Wild West, right? Like you can get attacked at any time. It's dangerous to be walking about. Like, there are these roaming groups of people attacking other people. I had no context for it. But then it also sort of, like, recontextualized like the characters in Tanakh, or specifically in Torah in this week's parasha, where these people aren't, like, no one has a home, no one has a security system. You're walking around, whether it's the desert or just the wilderness or whatever it is, like trying to find the next place to set up camp and stay there for an extended period of time. And that's a scary thing to do. You can be attacked. Like, you don't know who else is walking around and who you'll cross paths with. We see that twice in this week's parasha, in that, like, Yaakov and Esav meet up, and like that attack can come from anywhere. And then it also sort of like legitimized Yaakov's fears after this whole Shechem episode, where he's like, anyone can come and attack us now. Like, we provoked this huge city, and he's terrified because, yeah, anyone can just come and walk around. And it was just like an interesting, like, I think that's...
Right. It's like also kind of amazing that Yaakov and Esav find each other.
Yeah.
Right? Like, I kind of never thought about, like, I'm like, there aren't that many people in the world, but
hello?
Like, I definitely think that, like, if the Tanakh was made into a show, like, it feels like Game of Thrones is the show that it would be. Like,
100%.
There's like a little bit less fantasy involved because, like, but there's still like angels, burning bushes, like, all of, spoiler alert.
Lots of sex.
Yeah. Lots of sex, lots of fighting, killing. Yeah.
It was just an interesting thought experiment of like, it is interesting now if I'm like in my mind's eye imagining this story, seeing it in the like Game of Thrones world,
right.
Maybe less like horses and knights of like armor and things like that.
Right. Something else I wrote down is like this part of the Torah, it's all about family drama. Like
yeah.
The Torah is a soap opera. Mm-hmm. Game of Thrones is a soap opera. Like Game of Thrones, what you don't know about Game of Thrones, or maybe you do, is that like all of the different families are like interconnected,
yeah.
Right? It's like, and like this person married this person, and so this person then is the heir. And oh, I hit my mic, sorry. Yeah, it's like
my favorite thing at the end of the episode is like there's been this huge bloodbath, like this massive battle, and you know, everyone's dead. My man Rob has seen his like wife be like brutally murdered and his unborn child
after she just told him she's pregnant,
and then this guy comes up and goes, the Lannisters send their regards, and it's like this very dramatic moment, and I'm just googling who are the Lannisters.
Okay, so the background
and then it's Peter Dinklage, his character,
right?
Yeah.
Okay.
No, but so it was just so funny because I'm like, ooh, the Lannisters, who are they?
So the Lannisters are like technically the like rulers of this kingdom. But mm-hmm. What's weird about Game of Thrones is it's like, or one of the things I like is the way that they describe all of the kind of palaces of all the different families,
right.
Like around the country, and how they're all like made in these like very specific geographical areas,
right.
As well. Anyway, but so the Freys are... Rob was supposed to marry one of his daughters. That was the
whole
thing.
That was Filch from Harry Potter. Okay.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. He was supposed to, like, Rob was supposed to marry one of his daughters originally. And then he, like, fell in love with this other woman.
Una Chaplin. Continue.
And they, exactly. And then they got married. Jennifer Love Hewitt.
Yeah, she looks like Jennifer Love Hewitt. Like, my first note before I realized that I had seen her in a different movie was, why is Jennifer Love Hewitt here?
In this movie. And she looks incredible. She looks like
hot.
A 20-year-old. Anyway, he was supposed to marry one of his daughters. He fell in love and married this girl instead. And so then there's a moment where, like, because he obviously chooses to marry a woman that he's met and has feelings for rather than someone he's never met. But then the girl that they end up marrying off to, what's his name? The guy that gets married in the thing.
Oh, the guy from The Crown.
The guy from The Crown, exactly.
That's the other thing. I spent this whole time on IMDb being like, why do I know your face? But yeah, so Prince Philip marries.
Prince Philip marries his daughter. And you see there's a moment where Rob is like, is that the one? And Filch is like, yeah, that's the one you would have married. Because obviously she's beautiful.
Yeah.
Anyway, so yeah. And then that's what Frey, like, the Lord Frey partners up with the Lannisters and another family too, I think, to orchestrate
Bob.
This whole thing because he's so upset that Rob has like snubbed the allegiance between their two families.
That part I understood.
Yeah.
I just didn't know who the Lannisters were.
Yeah.
But that also,
they're all blonde and there's incest, which is like so relevant to the Torah.
Nice.
thank you. Because like, the one woman is sleeping with her twin brother, and, like, all of their children are, like, not the result of her marriage, but the result of her thing with her brother. Yeah,
I don't
it's
like
kind of fucked up.
I was going to say that when you described the very different living spaces of the different kingdoms and the castles, that reminds me of sort of, like, later on when the land gets split up between the tribes.
Yeah.
And, like, they're all very different, like, geographical locations with their own, like, the mountain country and the sea country and things like that.
Totally.
Yeah, what a show.
It's quite a show.
Also, because I was so bored for the first 45 minutes.
Mm.
And then I had to rewind because it was so slow that I missed the trigger of, like, the bloodbath.
Yeah.
And had to rewind it to see what happened. Like, that entire scene was fantastically done. Like, it's brilliant.
All the
stabby, television.
Stabby.
Or just like, because when I rewound it, I, like, went to the beginning of the scene and the build-up. So, like, when she pulls back that, like, he puts his arm there, like, purposefully, so she pulls it back and sees the chainmail.
Yeah.
Because it's not enough to catch her by surprise. He has to give her that moment of dread,
right,
as well.
That's good.
And then also, I know it's, again, supposed to be dramatic, but the end where she, like, cries after Rob's been killed, and then she just, like, sort of stands there, and you see her, like, you see her with her grief.
Yeah.
For, like, but it's, in my opinion, like, just the tiniest beat too long before this guy steps in and slits her throat. And so,
right,
like, I sort of was like,
well, because she slits, like, the girl's,
yeah, yeah,
throat.
And then just,
yeah,
stands there.
Yeah.
And I think because it was, like, a beat too long, it went from being like, wow, this is powerful, to me being like,
that's funny. Yeah. I think she doesn't die. I think that's, like,
what? Spoiler for a show I'm never gonna watch.
I know. I can't quite remember if that actually, like, gets borne out in the show or not. Because, again, I haven't seen the end of the show.
In ages.
Right, and I haven't read the books in a long time. But yeah, there's, like, a thing where she doesn't totally die or something. I don't know. Literally,
people are
screaming.
Valerie, watch the show.
Listen, I'll read the new book when it comes out, if it ever comes out.
Yeah, fair.
You know, George R. R. Martin, the reason that there are, like,
Guru
so many...
Martin.
I have to go. That was it for me.
His mother was a bear, and, like, that's how he was named.
Okay.
I'm going to tweet that later. You're welcome.
His name should have been Dove.
You're welcome, internet.
Or Door. No, what is it?
Dove.
Dove.
Dove Bear.
Yeah.
Yeah, nice.
I got it the first time.
Dove Bear Mountain.
Anyway, he says that he, like, doesn't want you to love any of his characters. Like, he doesn't want there to be a Harry Potter. Like, you know, Harry Potter will never die.
Right.
Like, he wants you to be afraid every time his characters are in,
right,
danger. And so, like, but it is, like, one of these shows where it's, like Ned Stark gets killed, like, at the end of the first... And
yeah,
it's shocking when it happens,
yeah, yeah,
in the book. And the Red Wedding, too, is absolutely shocking when it happens. Because,
like,
you're like, yeah, what the fuck are we going to do without Robb Stark? Like, that's,
yeah,
insane.
I think that's also interesting because it means, like, the narrative is pushed forward by the narrative itself in a way.
Mm.
Like, the importance of the overall story doesn't rely on individual characters who are dispensable, but rather it's about, like, the culture and the society,
yeah,
around it. And, like, that it, like, if that makes sense, like, that itself.
Right. I mean, like, it is really about the, like, Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
Like, very aptly named book.
Yeah, it's really interesting.
Okay, so shall we go on to... Okay, we talked about the bloodbath.
Also, we connected, obviously. I don't think we made,
yeah,
it clear. We made it...
If it's not clear.
Yeah, like, the idea that, you know, there's this wedding and then this absolute, like, mass murder happening. And then, obviously, in this week's parasha, Dina is given to... Or is about to be given to Shechem. And then Levi and Shimon massacre the town.
Right, wild.
Yeah, I have a lot of feelings about it. I have a lot of feelings about, like, the Dina story in general.
Right, yeah. We don't really get, like, a good stand-in for Dina because we don't know anything about the Frey daughter who gets married.
Right. Right. Yeah. I don't know, it's just, like... I don't know, the thing, because we had this discussion last podcast, I'm not sure if you kept it in or not, about whether it's... explicitly rape or not.
Oh yeah, I kept part of it in.
Okay, so I think Well, one of the, like, the wording it uses is, like, forcefully, he forcefully takes Dina. But the thing that I noticed last year, actually, when I learned this parasha, is that before he takes Dina, she is Dina but Leia. She's the daughter of Leia. She's just a random lady's daughter.
Mm-hmm.
Then he takes her because he sees her and lies with her. And then he's drawn to her. When he's drawn to her, he's drawn to Dina but Yaakov.
Yeah.
And so my theory was, he's drawn to her because he realizes that it's a, like, it's a powerful connection to make. And that sort of informs my reading of it. This is not romance. Because my biggest gripe, we discussed it in the context of the Red Tent, in which it is romance, but I'm like, it's not, because
right.
He takes her forcefully and then realizes who her father is. And then he's like, oh, this is a good lass to bed or to keep.
Right.
But yeah.
Right. And you drew the connection also between that and then, like, in Game of Thrones, it's the same deal where, like, you're marrying for power,
yeah,
rather than for love or, yeah, for attraction.
Well, that's also, I think, like, the bigger, like, difference between Game of Thrones and Torah is that in Game of Thrones it's all about marriages for power and, like, marrying these great houses, and in Bereshit specifically, all of the marriages, or a lot of the marriages we see, are specifically not to do that. It's like they marry to keep within the family, not to spread out. In previous parashiyot, we've seen, like, Yitzchak send, like, he, like, Rivka and Yitzchak send Yaakov to find someone from Rivka's family. And Abraham sends his servant to find someone, like, from his family. And then when we do see, like, this marrying out, which I'm saying with, like, you know, all of the inverted commas in the world, like, Esav marries two women and his parents don't like that.
Right.
And so I just think it's very interesting, like, do we marry in these big soap operas, do we marry for power and for connection, or do we marry for values and for the shared, like, family value? And to keep that going.
Right. I mean, and it is, like, discussed in the Torah of, like, or maybe by Mefarshim, of, like, the fear of the other, right? Like, who was it when we were talking about? Oh, because we've been talking about Bamidbar 12 so much. Right. In our educators cohort, we've, like, been talking about Bamidbar 12 for weeks, which is where... Aaron and Miriam are discussing it, where they're discussing if Moshe, like, married a Cushite woman, and some of the Mefarshim are very bothered by the idea that Moshe would have taken another wife, but partially because, like, after he becomes the prophet of Israel, that he would take a wife from outside of Am Yisrael is, like, upsetting to them.
Yeah.
And then, like, some people, like, there's, like, a midrash that's the queen of Cush, because, like, oh, it's only okay for him to marry someone that's not Tzipora if it was the queen of another country.
But also, that is based on its own, like, this, like, I think it's obviously it has its roots in midrash, but it's just insane, like, this whole story of Moshe being the king of Cush for, like, 80 years just randomly, but we never hear about it.
Right, but I was, like, honestly good, because he needed a resume builder, because he was not prepared to be the prophet of Israel. Like, good thing he had this experience as a king.
Yeah.
Okay, so now that we've just eviscerated Moshe.
I don't know if there's any other, like, mamash direct connections I'd make to this week's parasha.
Well, we kind of spoke a little bit about, I was also going to say, as far as marriages, that's like one of the issues with Jon Snow and Ygritte, which I did not know that's how you pronounced her name.
I'm going to need actors.
Jon Snow.
Kit Harington.
Yeah. And so that's the scene where he's, like, at the bottom of the tower and they're like, there's the woman who's like,
they're married in real life.
Yeah. They have, like, a romance in the books, although I was not sure, like, what the dynamic was in this episode, because he kept, like, pushing her away, or, like, they seem to kind of be antagonizing each other. So I guess they're still flirting at this point. But, like, there's also a thing about, like, the two of them, because he was working... he got sent to work at the wall, which is like the like border between this like hill country. I don't even know how to describe what's on the other side of the wall, except that it's horrible.
Okay.
And, yeah. And that there are like these like shadow walkers or white walkers that people again are screaming at me.
Oh, I've heard of the white walkers.
Yeah, which are like undead basically. Yeah. And so like the wall is there and there's like this group of men called the Watch that are there to kind of like defend this northern border wall. And so Jon Snow gets sent to be one of them. And there's this like relationship between the Watch and the Wildlings, which are these people that live like up in this northern place. And obviously they dislike each other. And so there's like a lot of mistrust that's sowed in there. But I feel like it's the same thing of like people. It's like a Romeo and Juliet situation, right, of like people from these like warring factions.
Also with the point that you raised, Jon Snow.
Yeah.
I can't tell you any of the other characters' names, but there's the group of characters in the tower.
Right.
Hiding.
Bran and the younger brother.
Yeah. He was a cutie pie. The really little boy like curly hair. Sweetheart. And then you've got the one whose eyes went weird and he did magic. Didn't like him.
That's Bran.
Didn't like him. Not a fan. And then you have...
Did you realize that it's like he can like go into the minds of those other people?
That's because he quieted the man named Hodor.
Yeah.
And then the one who voices Ferb from Phineas and Ferb, who's also from Love Actually, he was there too.
I can't remember. I don't know exactly who he is because I thought at first he was one of the brothers, but he's not.
I don't know. And also the lady that was with them, like the woman, she's Tonks in Harry Potter.
Yeah. She's also a wildling. And I don't know if you caught that.
Wildling.
That he like says something about, they're like, don't you like drink blood? Like wildlings like drink people's blood. And then they're like walking to the tower. She's like, I am a little thirsty.
That's
or like something like that.
Yeah. I missed that. That was probably one of the parts where I was bored out of my mind because nothing was happening in this show.
Yeah. Except just straight racism from Bran, which is kind of weird.
But the point that you raised of...
Like this misconnection.
Yeah, or like passing... What is it? Like passing ships.
Passing in the night. Yeah. Right, like because Jon Snow is down below and it's like their brother that they've grown up with, although he's a mom's there. No. Yeah. He's born out of wedlock, and so that's why his last name is Snow and not Stark, because there's also this thing about whatever. Listen, it's a whole thing about anyway, so yeah, so there's this, like, missed connection between the two of them, and just, like, as we're talking about, like, brothers who ultimately meet, and then in this world of these books, these family members get, like, flung all over the place, and then like this idea that they would be in the same place at the same time but just separated by like such a small thing. And then even like Bran, when he goes into the mind of the wolf, is like, John was down there, but then like John runs off and they don't have a moment to
like Rob's a Stark, right?
Yeah.
Is Arya a Stark?
Yes.
And so you've got her where she sees people from, like, she's outside of this wedding.
Yeah.
She doesn't see her brother, and who I assume is maybe her mother, being, like, viciously murdered, but she does see people, I guess, from her home base.
Yeah.
Right? Being, like, slaughtered in front of her. And so that's also this moment of she almost, like, reaches out and then...
Well, and she has been, like, on this, like, crazy travel journey, I think, at this point. And so, like, and she's being brought back by that guy with the scar on his face, who is, like, this super evil dude. And then, like, she is just verbally eviscerating him in a way that was incredible. Like, Arya is, like, such a badass.
I forgot how, like, little Maisie Williams was at the beginning of Game. That's also three seasons in. She was even smaller, like, at the beginning of it.
I would watch it just to see the scenes with Arya again, because
I'd watch it to I'd watch it to see the actors and sort of like how they grow up in the show.
There was a part of me that was like, I could keep watching from this point. Like, I kind of
I could not have to go back to the beginning and start again. I don't have the koyach. I'm 15 seasons into Grey's Anatomy. It's keeping me going.
Okay. Also, one of the things that really bothers me about Game of Thrones is that like the wolves, it's like, that's like a thing from the very first book, that like the five Stark siblings all like have a wolf that like corresponds to them, and even Jon Snow has one, and they have like a connection with this wolf, and they're traveling with these wolves.
It's so weird. That's like the his Dark Materials.
It totally is. Yeah. Yeah, like the golden compass, but it's kind of like that, but not exactly. Except then when Bran is able to like go into their minds and he's paralyzed, and so like, which also happens in the first book. That's why he's like in a wheelchair. Anyway, and so, but then all of the wolves get killed, basically. Like, it's like
R.I.P.
super depressing. Like, they set up this like kind of cool thing where like even like the girls have wolves. Like, Arya used to have a wolf and her wolf got killed. Like, it's just like, I don't know. That's the part that I would come for George R.R. Martin.
I'll come for Gurr.
I'm like, just let the wolves live.
I know, I have some other thoughts about the show.
Cool, yeah.
I'll offer them. Una Chaplin, who he said was Rob's wife. So at first I thought she looked like Jennifer Love Hewitt, and then I remembered that she's also Charlie Chaplin's granddaughter, which I think is more important. But then even more important than that, she is in one of the better Nicholas Sparks movies.
Which one?
She's the one that has like a Holocaust subplot.
What?
I think it's The Longest Ride. Okay. The one with what's his name? Clint Eastwood's son. Scott Eastwood and Britt Robinson.
Okay.
Or Robertson, whatever it is. So she's in that movie. The other thing I'd say, Kit Harington, Richard Madden, I understand they're half-brothers now. They look way too similar, and casting them is confusing. And you shouldn't have two of the same man in the same show. It's too much. Again, my first thought that I originally wrote down was all of these people are going somewhere, but I have no idea where they're going.
And they're all going different places, to be honest. It's, like, pretty crazy.
And it's, I don't know, it's, like, it's a hard show to get hooked in. You'd have to watch it from the first episode, because...
Oh, well, yeah, also because this is not something we talked about. At least the Torah doesn't do this so much, where, like, generally the Torah follows one character and then follows a different character and then follows a different... This, it's, like, you're seeing so many subplots that it's, like, basically you don't make any progress in the show, except that, like, everything that happens in the show is, like, laden with all of these, like... like what's gonna happen now that they've like made this decision to like attack this whatever, like everything is like very loaded, but like no progress gets made in any Game of Thrones shows because they have to show six different plot lines.
I find interesting like with that is that you do have that sometimes in Torah, but like obviously the first thing that comes to mind is Yehuda and Tamar,
right?
So like we're following Yosef's story and then all of a sudden we have this like Perek of let's just check in somewhere else and then it comes back to
meanwhile
this. So I found that interesting because like it does jump around in that style a bit more in the show, but overall maybe I'd give this a chance, but also I'm over fantasy. I'm over things that like put such high stakes in such silly things, if that makes sense. Like, we're talking about a world with dragons. We're talking about a show where their siblings are named Bran and Rob. Like it's silly.
I just, like, we can't talk about silly names, like, when we're doing a Torah podcast.
I don't know, like, as
the
in...
The silliest as of in names.
Those names make sense to us culturally. But again, like, this idea of very important or serious things having very... mundane names like Rob cracks me up every time. Also Bran, like, what is he, a fiber? It's dumb.
The most
get
offensive
better
thing.
Names Game
even
of
more
Thrones.
Offensive than like my discussion, my like lack of knowledge about plot points is you just being like, these names are dumb. Dragons are dumb.
Get better names. I don't know, it's like it's such high stakes for no payoff, you know what I mean. Especially now that I know that everyone hates the last season. I'm like, why would I put myself through that?
Right. People do hate the last season.
Yeah.
Whatever. Again, I'm...
You wouldn't know. You haven't watched it.
I read the books. Bring it on, George R. R. Martin. I'll read them again. I was also reading this other really old fantasy series for a long time by Robert Jordan, the Wheel of Time series. And I'm on the last book, but I'm like halfway through it. And I just like, I don't know. I just like have lost my will to care. But I used to have like middle-aged men stop me because I would like be reading them like on a plane, or like this guy who like does work on my parents' house every so often like saw me reading one, and they would all just like lose their shit. And they were like, I haven't seen somebody reading that book for 10 years.
It's
and I'm
so
like,
funny.
Yeah, it's just like, I don't know. I started and now I can't stop. And actually the people compare Game of Thrones and Wheel of Time a lot because Robert Jordan Jordan did die while the middle, and this other fantasy author, Brian Sanderson,
came in. Brian Sanderson.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So he came in to like finish out the series, and he and Robert Jordan worked together for a long time, like over the course of a year, I believe, and he like had all of Robert Jordan's notes and whatever. But there is like a big difference between the two writers, of course. So people say that like George R. R. Martin, it's going to be another one of those. Don't say Gurr again.
Gurr Martin. I was going to say, I just remember like in like late primary school, elementary school, reading the Aragon series.
Mm-hmm.
Bro, talk about a book that needs a bloody editor. Those books were a slog and a half. Also like terribly written. One of also the worst movie adaptations of a book.
So bad.
Like it was again like high fantasy, and they were wearing jeans the whole time. Just like cracked me up. I'm currently rereading a book called She Said, which is about
as in that's what.
Yeah. Well, you're not gonna like that now that I say what it's about. It's about the two of the New York Times writers who broke the Harvey Weinstein story and sort of like kickstarted the Me Too movement of 2016. Fantastic book, the most satisfying book to read, whilst also like just like frustrating you to no end, because like why has no one read this before, or like written this before, rather. And I always, in my mind, I compare it to Spotlight, because Spotlight's one of my favorite movies of all time. I can literally sit down and watch Spotlight any time of day, because you know what the ending is. Like, you know what the end, like, you've read the article, right? You've read that original New York Times article. You know that they, like, quote-unquote win. Same with Spotlight. You know they uncover, like, this huge story. So you get this sort of mystery, like, that this also journalist mystery that's, like, the steps of getting to the end just as satisfying as the ending itself, because you know they're going to crack it. You just don't know how.
The most amazing thing about Spotlight is that they make Rachel McAdams look like a totally mundane reporter.
I don't know how they do it.
Yeah.
It's such a good movie. And so then She Said, in my head, even though I know Spotlight is based on a book, but in my life, like, She Said is the book version of Spotlight. And I found out, because like, as I'm rereading it, obviously I do some Googling, they're making a movie of it. And get this, Zoe Kazan, Carey Mulligan, Patricia Clarkson.
Shut up.
Obviously there's another big man name attached. I completely forgot what man is in this movie.
Who cares? No one cares.
But like, oh, it looks like it's going to be, I'm very excited.
Okay. Let's,
Andre Brower. That's who it was. How could I forget Andre Brower? I'll lend you the book when I'm done, but like, it's just, wow.
Yeah.
It's a really good read. Also, it makes me sort of like Gwyneth Paltrow again.
I wanted to bring up the quote that I sent to you that was, like, the girl is like, how do you know all of that? And the dude, whose name is Sam, is like, oh, I read about it in a very old book. And she goes, you know all that from staring at marks on paper. You're a wizard. And I was like, literally what we do every day.
Just reading things.
Or like reading Torah is like that's what I imagine somebody saying to like Mefarshim, right? Like,
or just like a woman in the Middle Ages who knew how to read things.
Right, yeah,
witch. A little fun tidbit of Torah, which is
please share.
There's this point where Yaakov's talking to Esav, and he's trying to say like, please, like, take this gift, like, take it from me, and he says, Alken ra'iti panecha ki ra'ot pnei Elokim v'tiritzeni, which is, you have like, I've seen your face, and it's like, I've seen the face of God, and you have to receive me favorably. So it sounds like he's saying a good thing, right? Like, I've seen you, it's divine, it's lovely to see you. But then you remember that like the previous scene in this week's parasha is Yaakov getting his ass beat by a divine, like what he perceives as a divine being. And so like when he says Esav, like, you, it's like seeing you is like seeing the face of God. It's like seeing you is like terrifying. It's like I'm getting beat up by the side of a river again. At least that is my connection that I've drawn, and I quite like that. But yeah, it's such an interesting parsha. Who is this man that beats up Yaakov by a river?
Oh, wow, what a question.
Is he an angel? Is he a manifestation of Esav's, like, the fear that Esav holds over Yaakov after all of these years?
That is just like, it's such a bizarre story. Like, yeah. What in the world?
Because that also makes sense.
He gives Yaakov his name, but then Yaakov doesn't take the name until later when God gives it to
also,
Yaakov.
We're defined by that name now. That
Yeah.
But I think this idea of like, it is, maybe it's this fear that of Esav that is still just hanging over Yaakov's head over, after all these years. And this brotherly like battle that they have between the two of them, Yaakov finally wins, but he walks away with a limp.
Right. No. It's like that scene in Gilmore Girls where Kirk thinks that his pillow is a bomb, and so he's like trying to like
It's exactly like that.
No, like,
you're right, Valerie.
Yaakov is just having this like crazy dream, and he's like acting it out. He's wrestling with that rock.
Oh, it's so funny. Anyway, shall we cast?
I just want to say that when... never mind. Whatever.
That's it.
I just can't remember that guy's name who's with Arya. He has, like the hound. Oh, it's the hound. That's his name.
You know, the guy with the scar. Oh, Scarface.
So when he's, like, eating pig's feet in just the most disgusting looking way, and he's like, best part of the pig, and I'm like, it doesn't even look like it's cooked, like it just is so revolting.
Also, like, his plan is so bad. He's like, I got meat for the feast, and they're like, the feast is already happening, and he's like, well, I got more of it, and they're like, get the fuck out of here.
Well, and they're literally like trying to save his life. They're like, they are literally murdering every single person in that
it's
room.
So
like,
funny.
You don't want to be in there.
Okay, crazy. Casting, I think we are casting the roles of Shimon Levy and Dina. To start off, I'll start off with Levy. Okay. I have cast the actor Oliver Jackson Cohen.
Okay.
He's in The Haunting of Hill House.
Nice.
And The Haunting of Bly Manor.
Okay, you're going for a spooky thing.
Yeah, he's also in The Invisible Man.
Is The Haunting of Bly Manor good?
I love it. It's very gay. Okay. Very gay. It's a, like, it's a, like,
I'm sold.
It's a love story that is told through the genre of horror.
Cool. I'm
He's also in, he was fantastic in The Invisible Man and he was in that with Elizabeth Moss. I think he's sort of got that really like powerful, but in a very quiet, solemn way that you sort of imagine Levy, who is the father of the Levites, to have. So Oliver Jackson Cohen is my Levy. My Shimon, Freddie Stromer from Harry Potter and the Half-Blood Prince and from Pitch Perfect and from Unreal. He's the guy in Pitch Perfect who runs the radio station.
Nice.
Just another type of like this like sort of silent but like still super jacked dude who'll like silently walk into a town and then hurt, like murder everyone.
Oh, that man can wear a beanie.
And then my Dina, sort of connected to my Oliver Jackson Cohen, is actually Victoria Pedretti, who's also in The Haunting, Haunting of Hill House, Bly Manor. Bless you. Most recently, she was in You. Seasons 2 and 3 of You on Netflix. She's wonderful. She's just a fantastic actress, and I think she could do so much with any sort of role.
She's good.
Also, she's Jewish. And I'm pretty sure she's also a legbet LGBTQ+ member. She's so many things.
Yeah, I see that for her.
Being gay or being Jewish.
Like notices like.
She's also 26. It's insane. Like, how am I the same age as this like wonderful goddess of a human?
Wow. I don't know. I can't answer that. Okay, my casting.
Your casting.
I'm gonna start with Dina. I'm gonna say Gal Gadot.
Interesting. You've gone slightly older than my casting.
Yeah, actually I really have.
Okay.
Okay. And then once again,
so is this, wait, is the Gal Gadot, well, first of all, it's Gal Gadot because she's not French, she's Israeli.
I don't care.
Gulg, is this Dina as the story's happening, or is this Dina maybe like 15 years later?
I guess it's Dina 15 years later. Oh, that would be a good movie, wouldn't
it? It's just
it?
The end of the, like, red tent.
Yeah, no, but yeah. Nice. Right, she can go with all my old ladies who I cast last week.
Nice.
And then I was thinking about when I cast Robin Wright as Rachel, and you were like, too bad, like, that she dies in the next Parsha. And I'm like, no, what if it was like she comes back in like a ghostly form? You know, it's like the four sisters are all like together again.
That's funny.
I've been thinking about it a lot. I think it could work. Anyway, okay. I'm listening.
Victoria Pedretti as like the young Dina, who this happens to, Gal Gadot as her reckoning with it 15 years later, Robin Wright as an like 50-ish year old Dina, like another 15, 20 years after that. And like, that's the movie I want to see.
Interesting. Wow. Yeah.
Also, I'm going to say it. Gal Gadot does not have the range that Robin Wright or Victoria Pedretti have.
Well, no. But whatever. I think it works for... Okay. Okay. Then here's the other thing. I went in two different... I agree that I was kind of wanting like a dark, grungy vibe. But then the first people I came across for Levy and Shimon, it was Pete Davidson and Machine Gun Kelly. Oh, I was like, I just want best friends who are going to like wreak havoc. Feral. Like chaotic. Like exactly. Feral is a good word.
Have you seen the Dionne Warwick SNL sketch? Mm-mm. So they're like a new one over the past like couple of years. Igor Nordum plays it's the Dionne Warwick talk show, because uh-huh. Dionne Warwick's now on Twitter and I follow her. It is the funniest thing you'll ever listen, yeah. Like see. But there's this recurring bit where she has guests on for like 5 minutes to explain something to her, and then she always has like, so for the past two, she has Machine Gun Kelly on. Uh-huh. She's like, I'm going to try and speak to Machine Gun Kelly. And then he sits down and goes, hey. And she's like, no, too scary. I'm like, I don't like it. And so they did it again for like a third week this week. And it's always Pete Davidson playing Machine Gun Kelly. And then this week she goes, I'm moving on from Machine Gun Kelly. I'm going to see if I can handle Post Malone. And so then it's Pete Davidson as Post Malone and sits down and is like, hey. And she goes, no, take it away. I don't like it. Cracks me up every time.
It's so good.
It's so funny. I'm going to send it to you later.
Yeah, send it to me. I just like, there's this video of like Machine Gun Kelly's daughter and like she's just trying to like eat a bowl of cereal or something, yeah. And the two of them are like no, like just like messing with her. I just like, that is the energy I'm looking for. Okay, but I think the real casting would be, and I know, like, is it not PC to cast Johnny Depp in things? Are we done with him?
I personally am done with him. Okay. I'm not gonna trying to like be like that person. I never liked Johnny Depp as an actor. He really like pissed me off.
Okay, because I
like
want
his
somebody...
Charlie, his Willy Wonka. Yeah, horrific. No, I hate him.
I didn't like it.
I'm gonna say something too that's gonna make everyone mad.
What?
I've never seen Pirates of the Caribbean.
Interesting.
Again, one of those things. I know everything about it. I've just like, not my genre.
My friend and I used to play Pirates of the Caribbean when we were like on our way to parties.
That's
like
really fun.
It was so funny. We would like crank it up. It's like bum bum ba da bum bum.
Oh, I listened to the ba-da-bum. I know, I listened to the music. I just never
I know. Yeah. It's so good. Yeah. And one time my orchestra played it and that was awesome. But okay, because what I want is like somebody that like goes with, because I was putting Jared Leto in the other brother role. But so I want somebody else that like fits in that same mold of like grungy, a little wild-eyed, a little so if you have a suggestion, I'm open to it. If listeners have a suggestion, I'm open to it.
Say it again. Of like someone grungy
opposite Jared Leto, somebody who like has kind of like a wild-eyed,
depends like what type of like wild eye you're looking for, because like the guy, what's his name, like Jared Edgerton, like the Australian guy, Joel Edgerton. Like, he's got a different... not him. I'm not thinking of him. Anyway, like, there's types who've, like, not got the grunge going on, but definitely have the wild eyes going on. I was thinking, you know what? I've got the perfect person for you.
Okay.
Robert Sheehan. The guy from that show. Well, he's from Umbrella Academy, and then he was on that British show.
Oh, yeah. He's good. I'll take him.
Not, not Skins. What am I thinking of? Misfits,
yeah.
He was in the Umbrella Academy and in Misfits, and he's just like fantastic. And so
should
I think
I watch the Umbrella Academy.
I really like it.
Okay.
Season 2 is gay.
Cool.
We should start a podcast of just being like, should I watch this? And me being like,
it's gay.
Is it gay? Or, is it gay with gay Shoshana and Valerie?
Okay. When we finish this podcast
next year.
Okay. Yeah. Robert Sheehan and Jared Leto, I think, would be great together. Nice. I can see it. Okay, perfect. Nice. Fantastic. Are we done?
I think so. Have we decided what we're doing next week for Vayeshev? Vayeshev is one of my favorite parshiot. It's also two people I'm very close with. It's their bar mitzvah parsha.
Ooh.
My brother and my friend Jordy. Jordal.
Interesting. Hold on.
Hi, Jordy.
Did
we look it up? Perp culture.
We actually don't have anything slotted in. Our options.
And we don't have
any.
Do we have any ideas?
Yeah, we do have ideas. Okay. Ferris Bueller or Inception. because it's about Yosef.
I don't know if I'm sold on either one. What I'm thinking is we still go do some brainstorming and maybe consult other people as well.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Sick. We should just post like on our Instagram story.
What do people think? Yeah, we could do that.
We could do, people could vote on a couple of options. That could be fun.
Cool. Alrighty.
Okay. Bye, everyone. It's been good.
Bye, guys.
Thanks for listening. See you next time.
Sorry, we don't know anything about Game of Thrones. Yeah, that's our bad. We should have chosen media we've already seen.
I think it's a good like thought experiment to be like, could we just drop in and watch? What if we piss off
all of our listeners?
Yeah, they're also mad. Hopefully you're still listening at this point. Maybe you turned it off way earlier when I couldn't remember the name of the Hound or any of the Maybe Stark
at the beginning when I was like, I've never seen an episode of this in my life.
Maybe. I can't believe you didn't do any research.
I thought I knew enough. Okay, my hubris got the best of me.
Me and this whole podcast. Me and pretending I know anything about the Persian. Okay.
Alrighty. Bye, guys. Everyone. Love you.
Love you.